Let's go now. A little life out here.
Everybody, welcome to the UK Packers podcast. As usual, I'm your host, that's DDDNFL on Twitter, and of course follow the group at UK Packers. And we're nearing the end of our pre-draft process. I've asked the IT hedgehog Peter Jones, the author of the 310-page colossus that is the UK Packers draft guide, and Apuli Shrew, our draft guru, resident draft guru, and these two lads really know their stuff. And we've walked through defense, we've walked through offense, and we're going to have a brief lick of special teams, lads, aren't we? Having a old suck on special teams. This has gone... I'm disappointed in myself, I think, is what I'm getting at here. Hi, Andy, Pete, save me. Hello, how are you? Stop me talking.
Yeah.
Good evening, Steve. Good evening, Andy. And that was it. That closes the episode on special teams.
Yeah, there'll never be another one. We're now cancelled. But come here, I mean, special... So what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about special teams... But we're not the type of guys, we're far too highbrow, right, to talk hot takes or anything like that. So this is the hot take show. We're going to talk about hot takes. I want the most ridiculous, silly thing. No, do you know what I want to do? I want to look into, because you guys got on, it might get boring for you, right? Because the draft for you guys falls into a certain order and players bubble up and players drop down and all these permutations go on. You're, you know, calculating stuff like Einstein. So I'm really interested to see what needs to happen in this draft for you to go, what are we doing? What's life? What is this? But before we get there, and I'll start with you, Andy, first, because we had a pre-production meeting and I have a page here of all of your notes of who to look out for at special teams. And the ink must have ran out in my pen. I don't have anybody. How do you feel about the special teams, Andy?
Yeah, well, we describe them as... I describe them. I don't want to tow you guys into the melee, but it was last year I described the kickers as spaghetti legged. This year, I don't even think they get the spaghetti treatment because they're not even at that level. They don't, no.
I didn't know spaghetti was a level. What's below spaghetti, Andy? You just don't bother. They're not.
I need to get the pasta chart out, don't I? I was thinking about throwing my CV in to compete with Carlson and Joseph. I think I've still got a 45-yard field goal in my right leg. Absolutely. So, it's a hole, isn't it? We've had a good laugh and a joke about it, but it's a hole, but it's a pretty important one. You know, think about it, determines where our exit for the playoff was sealed by that missed field goal, wasn't it? And it's one that the days of Mason Crosby being that reliable 90% kicker feel like a long time away, don't they, at the minute?
Yeah, do you know what? And we were sort of talking about it. I mean, last year, you rightly predicted that this would happen, Mason at Cedador. And I was sort of crying for Mason Crosby to stay. And then the season started and it looked like an arse because he was doing quite well, Carlson. And then he seemed to sort of fall down. Is this Gutekunst 101, Peter? I mean, you know, with the struggles of kicker. And I guess the question, let's roll it up into that then, because, you know, you have your... I feel sorry for you too, Pete, because you have this whole section on special teams. And I wonder, was this painful to write because you're writing it with Packers-centric? I don't see any green there, Pete, which sort of says that these could potentially be Packers. But look, how do you feel about the unit, Pete? I mean, do we need to bring in somebody to have more competition versus, do you think, Jesus Christ, the Irish just comes out of me sometimes. Do you think that Gutekunst is just going to stick with Whelan and Carlson with what he has and... It really isn't a relevant conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that both of those guys are in pole position, and I think that they may bring a punter in, you know, to help in camp and that kind of thing. But I think that job is Whelan's to lose, and I don't think he will lose it.
Yeah.
And I think the same with Carlson, although they have brought at least signaled some intention by bringing in Podlesny, who was the guy, who was at Georgia a couple of years ago, and then they picked up Greg Joseph, the guy that was at the Vikings. So I think they've signalled an intention to at least have some competition there at kicker, as camp goes on. Again, though, I think barring a major disaster, I think that's Carlson's job. I think that's his job unless he loses it, is what I'm trying to say. And so I don't think they'll go kicker or punter in the draft. I just don't think they'll feel the need to do that.
And juicy one then. I mean, looking at this list, and it's always this way, isn't it? I mean, you're never going to get punter and you have round one. It's just not necessarily the Raiders. It's not going to happen. So, I mean, you start at six. There's only two lads that you sort of deem worthy, one punter, one kicker, Torrey Taylor and Josh McCarty per your draft guide here, that would go round 6 to 7, and everybody else is an undrafted free agent. So sort of as someone who obviously doesn't grade and look at these guys myself, what is this crop of kickers and punters like? Is it the same? Is it the same as every year, kind of? Or is there anybody in here that you go, do you know what? This guy's interesting because, or are they all just down the pasta scale from spaghetti, as Andy says?
Yeah, I mean, I think generally speaking, year to year, the crops are pretty much the same. Every now and again, there'll be a guy that jumps out and, you know, is taken around round three or round four. There doesn't look like there's one in this year's draft. If one of these special teams guys were to go earlier than round 6 to 7, it would be the punter, Torrey Taylor out of Iowa. Mm. You know, exceptional in college. You know, his record as a punter is in college was very, very good. Bunch of NCAA records. He's nearly 27 years old. He'd be 27 years old by the time the season starts. Yeah. So he's an ex. He's from Australia, came over and that kind of thing, which is quite a pattern that's happening now a lot with punters. But I don't think that age thing so much is an issue at that position. You know, it would be a different position. So I think if one of them goes in the mid rounds, it would be Torrey Taylor. And the kickers, again, you know, you've got a bunch of guys. And I think it always, with these specialists, it always just depends on team needs. Right. So I think teams that are looking for a punter or a kicker are always prepared to reach a little bit into round 6 or round 7 to get who they deem to be, you know, the best guy for fear that somebody else gets him.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, even some of the guys that you would normally think that they're probably going to be undrafted free agents, a team might reach a round or so to get those guys. So, yes, I think one kicker, one punter get drafted. It wouldn't surprise me to see two of each get drafted, just because, as I say, there will be teams that are looking specifically for those positions.
I mean, the media, the NFL media are gagging for it, really. And, you know, when they look at it and they're like, oh, Jesus, oh, I can't wait. And then the minute one gets drafted, it becomes the big sort of juicy story. Like, we always had, for some reason, in Pac Nation, there's always some sort of drama. You know, Gutekunst that year, what was it, Goody? Who went and cut all of the kickers and then, you know, like, brought someone else in. Stuff, weird stuff kind of happens like that. But look, let's move away then from special teams, if there's not a whole lot to talk about. But let's kind of stick on special teamers. What I wouldn't mind picking your brain on, lads, is, you know, what players out there do you feel could be drafted or brought in as undrafted free agents in this draft class that would be a punt return specialist, a kick return specialist, or just a good tackler to have on special teams?
Can I just throw a long snapper into the mix?
Oh, yeah.
Because I think with the Packers having 11 picks, I think a long snapper's not out of the question for the Packers. So there's one long snapper that, although grading-wise he's further down the board, ought to be an undrafted free agent, I think he probably goes in the 7th round because he's the top long snapper in this draft, Peter Bowden of Wisconsin. And they'll, again, using the same rule, there's probably a team out there that's going to be looking for that position. He's not out of the question for the Packers in about round 7.
Yeah, interesting.
When you've got 11 picks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's obviously, he'll be a guy that they know very well. They've had him in for a local visit. Not that that necessarily means anything, but
might have been passing the stadium piece just on his way to 7-Eleven and he said, "Here, come here. You long snapping, man."
But yeah, I mean, it's just one to kind of park in the back of your mind that it wouldn't be a complete shock if when you've got 11 picks that you take a long snapper in round 7.
Well, look, you've predicted Jordan Love to the Packers, and that's certainly a soundbite I need to dig out. But I think this will top that, Peter. If Peter Bowden, long snapper from Wisconsin, gets drafted in the 7th round, I think it's just, you know, just aggregating all of the ones. But Andy, come here. Is there anyone in this draft? And I know I do want to get into sort of you know, loop back to the positions that we have covered, because there's always breaking news and there's guys that when you listen back to the podcast, you think, damn it, I forgot to mention this guy. But Andy, special teamer wise, is there anybody sort of a gadget player that you can think of that would fit this Packers roster in that regard?
I think we already have them. I don't think we need to go looking in that regard. I think we have enough talent on the return team as it stands. I think obviously Nixon's done a great job, and with the rule changes, I think that'll slightly alter the metrics as well, won't it? Mm. Certainly in terms of kicker, there's nobody with the leg strength for me. I know accuracy is the most important thing, but certainly playing in Green Bay, leg strength is a must, and there's just nobody there for me that warrants a look. The punter that Peter just described there, the Australian guy, I think he can hit a ball, can't he? Yeah, I think yeah. I think he hit several punts over 80 yards. So, quite the athlete, isn't he? So he'll be an interesting look. But whether or not we use a draft pick, I'd be sort of loath to do that, I think. But certainly a look as an undrafted free agent. So return, no. Kicker, no. Punter, no, in answer to the question. In terms of helping special teams, I think there's a number of guys that could help special teams. I briefly mentioned the guy, the safety, Malik Mustafa.
Yeah.
I think from Wake Forest, I think he would be somebody who could really be a special teams demon. So that would be my number one pick. And the guy that I mentioned, Terrence Knight, the linebacker, again, taken with special teams really in mind.
Yeah. Pete, any sort of, before, now we will sort of rinse back down through the positions, of course, Pete, but anybody out there with that sort of gadgety thing in mind?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we've mentioned all of these names already, but probably not in the context of their returning. So I think that Tyrone Tracy, running back in the middle rounds, who played 3 years as a wide receiver, 2 years as a running back, also returned kicks and returned more kicks in 2023 than he had previously in his career. So it's kind of all, you know, a bit of jack of all trades kind of guy. He could be, you know, a guy that you would take as a running back, but could be your kick returner. But as Andy described, you know, the Packers are well set with Keyshawn Nixon returning kicks and punts, Jaron Reed returning punts. I think the Packers are well set there. The other two names, both, you know, potential first round picks, Cooper DeJean, excellent punt returner in college. You know, you're not likely to use him in that role, but he can certainly do that. And your mate, Steve, Kool-Aid McKinstry, the cornerback out of Alabama, is also a really good punt returner. So some of those guys would, you know, could certainly double up, but they would be the second or third punt returner on your kind of punt returner depth chart, because you've got the guys there already, and you wouldn't, generally speaking, want to use your starters in those positions.
Yeah. Right, we are 2 days away from the draft. Thursday swings around. Yous are both goody somehow. Andy, you're on the clock. And if you sort of could wave a magic wand, I guess, and pick sort of who you wanted, when you wanted, what position group to go for, or whatever way you want to interpret this question, be it actual people, actual players, or just positions in what rounds, how does the board fall for you in an ideal world?
So I've got to jump in there when you said actual people. I thought we were going to be able to make up players.
Maybe.
Then for a minute.
You know, you could say safety or, you know, but I get your point. I mean, you can make them up. I mean, Kool-Aid sounds made up to begin with. So, I mean, you know, have at it.
Yeah, no, I would be, it's all about the premium positions for me. I think that's the only way to go in this draft. I think if we can get a offensive lineman who is deemed a tackle but can maybe shift inside and do a job at centre or guard, that's the priority for me. And then cornerback, I know that on paper we've got potentially the starting duo, but I also think that there's a gap there for a premium player. So, and like we discussed earlier in the week, I think we'll have to trade up to get either of those. So that's why I'm so high on the trade up scenarios, because of that reason. I would be shocked, and DeJean's the only one we'd sort of go for, but in terms of the safety position. But other, for me, it's a cornerback or a offensive tackle.
Okay.
Absolutely, that's what I want. But we're going to have to go up to get it, I think.
After that, who are we going for?
After that, you can go on your shopping list. After that, We can go safety. We can go linebacker. We can go running back. We can go depth of wide receiver. we can then fill the tank on offensive linemen and potentially an edge rusher. I think that's a shopping list time, absolutely. We've got plenty of picks, plenty of ammunition to get it done, haven't we? So after that, let Gooey do his thing.
Yeah.
If he repeats last year's draft, then we're going to be in good shape, aren't we? But I think it's the round one is pivotal, isn't it, for a lot of reasons and seeing how the board falls and all that kind of stuff. But I think to hit it out of the park, rather than stand pat at 25, I just love to see him up. I think the vibe is that we'll trade back and hit that sweet spot in the draft between picks 30 and 60, 70 and dominate that part of the draft. And that's a possibility. I wouldn't be unhappy with that because there's lots of good players in that zone. Hmm. It's just, as we've talked about, that 25 spot is kind of a nothing spot, isn't it? So, yeah.
So before I get to Pete's picks, in it. So we're going O-line, cornerback, and then, as you said, chopping lift with safeties, linebackers, running backs, wide receivers. You love your wide receivers, Andy. Jesus Christ. I mean, if you didn't put that in there, we'd go over and check your pulse.
Love them.
But so yeah. You don't think the Packers are going to stay pat at 25. That's the second prediction. You think that there will be, they're either going to go up and get somebody, or if they count to that, it's back into the later picks.
It takes two to tango, doesn't it? And that's the thing, isn't it? You know, we were clamoring for them to trade up year after year for different reasons, and it's finding that trade partner, isn't it? So it's equally as objective to look at teams that potentially want to trade back. That's why I sort of earmarked the Seahawks as one of the teams that potentially could do that. But I just think that the players that we will look for and will prize the most will be at that kind of 15, 16, 17 range.
Yeah. Pete, you're on the clock. Andy went O-line, cornerback, and then, you know, hit the shopping list, stack up on O-lineman, maybe hit an edge rusher, linebacker, running back, and sticking at 25 senior Andy Davies is likely not going to happen. They're either going to trade up, Seahawks being a good partner, or they're going to trade back. What is Peter Jones saying?
Yeah, I think Andy's right. I think all three things are have got decent chances. Right, you could
you're
almost.
You're not allowed to agree. You're just. It doesn't matter what your actual opinion is, Pete. This is how we're supposed to run these shows, isn't it? You're supposed to just disagree and argue, and Andy jumps in, and then one of you just hang up. But sorry to interject. They're the rules.
But so let's start off by assuming they stay at 25, right? Because Andy's right. I think the trade up is possible, but it takes, it takes two to tango, as Andy said. If they stay at 25. Then the pick for me is Cooper DeJean, if he's there, obviously. And I think that's a big question mark, right? And right now I would put those odds at about 50-50 that he's there at 25. Mm. If Cooper DeJean's not there but Graham Barton's there, then I would be happy to go Graham Barton. And if neither of those two are there, I suspect that the Packers have ruled out offensive tackle at that point, unless somebody drops, like Fuaga dropped, you know, in the people's draft, Steve, to that particular pick. If somebody like that dropped, they'd run the card up to take that guy.
Yeah.
But I think probably I like Amarius Mims, but I don't think the Packers will, because he's a huge guy that doesn't fit that kind of Packers' typical size threshold. Is bigger than the Packers' typical size threshold. So I think it's either lots of either ors here, right? So I think it's either DeJean if he's there, if not Barton if he's there, if not Kool-Aid McKinstry if he's there.
Well,
and if it's none of those three, then I think they're in trade down territory.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll know soon enough, right? Because they're obviously going to have good time to trade up and get the guy that they want. So
absolutely. And then when you get to round two, obviously, depending on what you did in round one, right? So if they were to go to DeJean in round one, then I can see a tackle. I can see a tackle, pick 41. So somebody like Kingsley Sumatea at 41. And then I think they then have to look at linebacker, whether that's with their second round pick or with their third round pick, depending on the run of linebackers. So for me, if it's DeJean, it goes DeJean, offensive tackle, linebacker.
Yeah.
If it's Barton's the first pick, then I think they go the opposite way around. It's Barton, and then I think it's probably a corner, right? So I think the likes of Max Melton and TJ Tampa are in play at that at 41 pick. And then again, further down towards the back end of round two, you're now looking at either linebacker or offensive tackle. The linebacker thing really worries me, just because of all the positions other than safety, it's one that appears to be a great need for the Packers. So I think somehow you've got to get a guy. And as we talked about earlier, there's some names, but there aren't that many.
Yeah.
And so there's a danger the longer you leave it, they're all going to be gone. And I think they've got to find one.
Is that where they reach Pete? I mean, we've seen this happen in prior drafts, yeah, DeGuara. Is this where they...
I think that's the issue, isn't it? When you're picking at 51 and then you've got a pick right towards the end of that round, there's a whole lot of picks between those two picks.
Hmm.
And if the run starts at pick 42, you know, the top three or four could be gone.
Yeah.
And then you're like, actually, my pick towards the end of round two can't be a linebacker because there's nobody of value at that point. And that's the danger that they have. And that's why Andy's other scenario about the trade back, where you start picking up maybe second round picks in the middle of the second round, is a really good one, because you're able to cover off if there's a particular run on a position.
Jesus, just saying it out loud then, it almost sounds like that is the strategy. Well, what do I know? But from the beginning, you know, to look at it and say, right, let's trade back to get those extra picks, to get that linebacker that we need. Makes sense.
Kill all ills if they trade back, don't they? If they trade back, I've done it a few times in the simulations, you can get your safety in Bishop, you can get your linebacker in Cooper or Wilson, you can get an edge rusher, maybe he's not the, you know, you can get a cornerback, maybe he's Max Melton, you can get everything you need by trading back, and you've got that volume of picks. So that's the difference. The only thing you don't then have is that potential home run hit, you know, that Gutie looks to get, you know, the big sort of high ceiling pick that he's looking to get, whether it's your BJ Raj, your Clay Matthews and all that kind of stuff. So that's the only thing that's missing out of that scenario, but you will tick a lot of boxes. And that includes your Jalen Wright at running back and in potential depth of offensive line, your cornerback, your safety, your linebacker. You're ticking all the boxes with that move.
Absolutely. And there's no doubt that there's going to be teams, you know, at the beginning of round two, or even in the middle of round two, and even teams after we pick in round one. So I know that the Buffalo fans seem to be high on Cooper DeJean, for example. We don't know that the Packers are, just because we are, and it might be that the Packers aren't, right? So it could be that Buffalo want to move up and take where the Packers are, or they might even jump the Packers to get Cooper DeJean. Now, that's only three or four spots behind the Packers, but that starts to give you another pick, and another pick that you can start to package up with other picks. So I think that Goody's phone is going to be like a hotline. It's not going to be popular amongst us UK and Ireland fans when we're sitting there from 1 o'clock in the morning and it's 3 o'clock in the morning and we're just about to get on the clock and we hear that they've traded to down to round two, but it is a strong possibility.
So, great breakdown. So Cooper DeJean, if it's possible, and then a tackle in Sumataya, then maybe a linebacker, second, third round. If not, Barton, and then maybe a corner, Max Melton, TJ Tampa, then a linebacker, and maybe stock up on some tackles then or whatever after that point. Assuming...
I guess my third possibility was that it's McKinstry in round one, because that's a safe nice pick at 25 if they stay there, and then that opens up pick 41 to either be probably again a corner, because you're looking at value there. The only other possibility there, I you know, who knows whether they would like this guy, is Javon Bullard, the safety out of Georgia, who is kind of a slot corner stroke safety guy, could be. But, you know, you kind of think, for me, it would be corner or offensive tackle, and I'm still trying to get that linebacker later on, and I'm trying to get Andy's guy, Cole Bishop, as early as I can in round three before somebody else gets.
Yeah. Well, look, we've spoken about what the ideal scenario is and sort of where the value lies in trading up and trading down. That's all logical. We understand it, and it's based on value and trades. Andy, what do the Packers need to do in this draft to A, surprise Andy Davies, and you go, what? I just don't get it. I don't get why you would go that position or that player or whatever. And to cut, let's tack on to that then, is what would the Packers need to do in this draft for it to be a disaster? And for you to look at it and go, nope, they went off the rails in the first instance, and then it just snowballed. And what do we do?
I don't think there's any real possibility of it being a disaster, if that makes sense. If we rewind, sort of pull some of the drafts out from the last sort of 6 or 7 years, there's one or two days where you think, what the heck was he doing? But there's also days like last year where you think, wow, he's completely nailed it. Mm. I don't think there's really any room for disasters. I just don't. I'm not as high as on the likes of Kool-Aid McKinstry, who seems to be getting a lot of airtime, isn't he? And as some. So some of those more hyped cornerbacks, I'm not as keen on, if I'm really honest. The top two guys I really like, Arnold and our man. But everybody else, I'm not as high on. I'm sort of higher on the likes of Max Melton further down. So I guess for me, it's all the ones with the cool sounding names, as you put it, Steve, I'm not as high on.
Yeah.
So I'd be disappointed. I'm not a Wiggins fan. I'm not a McKinstry fan. The guy from Michigan, the smaller guy, struggle with his name.
Mike Sanders still.
Yeah, I'm just not as high on those guys. The guy from Missouri, Rakestraw, I just... Not for me. I think I've been burned by the smaller cornerback syndrome, and I like to sort of stick to my 6'1 and 195. That does me as a baseline. That's just a personal preference. So for me, Steve, I'd like to sit within that framework, either go up and get them high or maybe settle down and take somebody as a round two. So that's what I wouldn't like to see. I'd be disappointed with that. I'd be okay with the Barton pick. I think he's got that Swiss Army knife ability, so it's a safe pick. But I don't really want to bunt on strike one. I want to go for the bleachers. So yeah, that's where I'd like to see us, and then just let Gooty do his thing after that. My confidence has been reinstalled after last year's performance. So yeah, trusting him we do. I read an interesting piece today. It was talking about not getting too emotionally attached to guys in the draft. I think it's a really good point. You know, at the end of the day, stick to your board and let the board fall, you know, let the board fall where it will, and stick to your board and trust in that value. And I think the times where we've got away from that, and we think about DeGuara and all that, AJ Dillon to a degree, it doesn't end well, does it? It doesn't end well when you end up reaching and panicking and thinking there's a run on tight ends, let's jump up and get it, you know. And I hope that doesn't happen with the linebackers, because I think Peter's spot on. I think there's two names there, maybe three at a stretch, four. But after that, the kind of well's empty for me. So taking a guy because he's a guy is not the answer. So we need to fill that gap. So I really hope we make it happen and get one of the top two guys, ideally.
Yeah. Yeah. Peter, same to you. I mean, what happens where you go, no, that's not why. Why are you doing? That's not in the plan.
Well, see, I think that, I mean, I don't disagree with Andy about the corners, right? I wouldn't. If I couldn't get Graham Barton or Cooper DeJean or, say, Amarius Mims, and like I say, I don't think Amarius Mims is probably on their radar, I would trade down, be considering trading down at that point, right? If those two guys are gone or whatever, then... So Kool-Aid McKinstry wouldn't be my guy, but I think that he fits some of their thresholds, played at Alabama, so I'm trying to guess to a little bit of degree who may be one of their guys, and I think he may be one of their guys.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a pick that I would be slight. I would understand it. It just, I would be slightly disappointed, because I would have, if I were running the draft, which is never going to happen, thank goodness. I would probably be trading down at that point. It's not to say that these guys aren't good players or whatever else. It's about what else could I get, you know, for that 25th pick. You know, if my top two guys are gone, could I get a bunch of whole bunch of other picks for that particular pick?
Yeah.
That one for me. We mentioned the other one the other day. It was Johnny Newton, the defensive tackle. Really good player. I really like him as a player. Right. He's 25th on our board. The Packers pick 25. Right. So I really like him as a player. I just wouldn't understand the pick for the Packers where we sit right now.
Yeah.
When we know that we've got other positional needs and we've got Kenny Clark, we've got Devontae Wyatt, we've got TJ Slayton, we've got Kyle Brooks, I wouldn't understand that pick as much as some of the others. Yeah. I guess to a degree, I think I'm coming down on the side of I hope they don't stand still, right? So I hope that they do actually trade from 25. And if they trade up, you know that they're going up to get a player they really like, which is good. Or if they trade down, they get a whole bunch of other picks. So that's kind of I'm all for the trade, and up or down, both work for them.
Well, look, we're going to cast the net really wide now, because inevitably what happens is that, especially for casual viewers like me, all of these names start to bubble up, and the experts catch hold of them. The diamonds on the rough become the stars of the performance. And then there's always some dude out there who hits a bong, or, you know, there's a bad news story and he starts dropping down the board. And as I said at the start of the pod, there's guys that you guys have cycled through hundreds of names, hundreds of hours of tape. Peter, you've spent 18 months, for God's sake, putting this thing together. So there's going to be guys here that, you know, slipped your mind in the last podcast, or someone that you were thinking about the last couple of days and said, you know what? Just looking at that tape, and God damn it, that guy's good. Andy, can I start with you? You free reign, whatever the position, whatever the need, be they undrafted or not. Who are the guys that would stand out for you? And if the Packers land them, you'd go, God damn it, that's a bloody good pick.
I think we should rinse through them by position group. So if you start off with offensive line, interior, tackle, whatever, center, I hope we stock up on some big, wide bodies down the bottom end of the draft. You think about the Adam Timmermans of this world, you know, where we picked him up in the later rounds of the draft going back a few years. That's what I want to see. So names like Ethan Driscoll, Tylan Grable, Garrett Greenfield, Mason McCormack, any mixture of those for me would be, I'll let out a little cheer of delight if we grab one of those for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the later round picks, offensive line, I think we will take one early, but I think we'll dip into that sort of hat in the later rounds as well. So four names to keep an eye on.
So come on, give us another position, Andy. Run through the whole bloody gamut of the whole things. Give us some tasty names.
Oh my
go on.
Goodness. So in terms of, let's go through defense. And so safety, another position of need, I guess. Keaton Adapo from Oregon State and DeAndre Prince, as another safety, would be two DBs to keep an eye on, other than names we've already mentioned.
And what rounds are we talking with like guys like this, Andy?
Oh, you're talking day three. So I think, would that be right, Peter? Particularly yeah. Adapo, would it be day three, wouldn't it? So, yeah, Prince would be similar, I would imagine. So, yeah, definitely that side of it. On the defensive line, I think Peter already mentioned one, Christian Boyd from Iowa, Northern Iowa, isn't it? I think he's a good option. Gabe Hall from Baylor, potentially, was one that I would like to take a punt at. And maybe it's Logan Lee, another Iowa guy. So three names there to look out for in later rounds.
And no pressure, but keep going, right? And this is going to be soundbited to be Jesus. So if we get these lads, it's another star on the Hall of Famer. So we've hit safeties, D-line, we've hit offensive line. Anyone else?
Yeah, but I'm sure Peter's got a number of names to throw into the mix there in those position groups.
Yeah, so I'll throw you some names. These are probably day two guys, the ones that we get in my mind, that for some reason I didn't mention when we went through the position group. So one's Roger Rosengarten, tackle out of Washington. Mm. Right, he's really good. He's really mobile. Was the fastest offensive tackle at the combine. He's big, 6'6", 6'7". I don't have the measurements in front of me. Had a bad game in the national championship game against Michigan. So people need to look past that game. But I think Roger Rosengarten is a name to watch on day two. I like the guard out of UConn, Christian Haynes. The only issue I have with him is he probably fits between the two Packers picks in round two. So, you know, unless they're getting extra picks, it's probably, you know, between those two picks. But I really like him. And they ran a lot of outside zone offense at UConn. And, you know, he would be a perfect fit for the Packers interior of the line. The other positions, Andy's kind of mentioned the guys at defensive line and safety, I think. Yeah, I had a safety right near the bottom of the draft, Dominique Hampton. But he's just, you know, kind of a seventh round, maybe a undrafted free agent guy. But Andy's picked out all the others.
And what's about that undrafted free agent kind of guy that catches your fancy then, Pete?
I just think that, you know, when you start looking at this kind of area in the draft, you're looking at guys that typically are experienced or are really good athletes or play special teams. So Hampton was a 6-year guy at Washington, played in 57 games in his college career. He plays special teams, and is also one of those safeties that plays closer to the line of scrimmage, you know, in a kind of Cole Bishop type vogue, if you like. Obviously not as good as Bishop. That's why, you know, we think Hampton's around the seventh round. But he's pretty physical, can match up with tight ends and stuff. And I just think he's a nice player for that area in the draft, and, you know, would be a good special teams guy. So, he's over 6'2", 215, that kind of size. So he's a pretty big guy.
Does they benefit from extra time in college, don't they? Was it Romeo Doubs was the guy who was in college for an additional year? Am I right in saying? Like, I know it's not that position, but it just at wide receiver. Or am I going insane? Do I remember that there was one of the wide receivers, I think, had spent an extra year in college, and that was the reason, I think, Pichu picked him out last year to say, watch out for this guy because he's valuable. Maybe I'm talking at my arse.
I mean, I think it's an important general point. For some guys, it's a benefit. For some guys, it isn't. You know, and a lot of that's going to depend on what their career's been to that point. You know, if there's a really good guy, but he's been injured for two of his college career, two of his college seasons, he might well be better coming back for another year rather than coming out into the draft and so on and so forth. And of course, what could sometimes happen with college guys, they get stuck behind, you know, a really good player, you know, just by fate, you know. Let's say you get a good quarterback, but he's stuck behind, I don't know, let's say Caleb Williams on the depth chart. Well, he's not going to play very much unless he moves schools, which we're seeing more of now, which the transfer rules are a lot more relaxed than they used to be. You've got the transfer portal, so players can move more easily. But you get a lot of that happening. So, yeah, it depends. You know, it just depends on the player's situation.
Yeah, could have too much tread on the tires if you're running back, let's say. That's, you've been asked to carry it.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I mean, you look at some of the running backs who have been really productive in college, but you're absolutely right. You look at, well, actually, you know what? That guy's carried the ball a heck of a lot through his college and high school career. How much more tread on the tires are there?
Yeah.
You actually look for the reverse, don't you? Well, I do anyway. I certainly prefer the running backs that have got less tread on the tires. I think it's it's a real positive going into the pro game.
Well, here's the segue for you, Andy. Any more positions that you want us to look out for? Because I'm jotting down these names here. I'm like, you know, when you hear, I don't know if you are into gambling or horse racing, but you know what, the odd year Cheltenham comes up and they start, all these experts come on and they start talking about horses. I haven't got a rashers. So I'm taking down all the names going, oh, look out for him. I might stick a fiver on him. So come on, Andy, any more horses in this race that you think we should keep an eye on?
Do you want each way or to win?
Oh, yeah. Whatever you want. I'm hedging my bets every which way.
If we're going to go running back, we're just talking about running backs. I think we mentioned the guys that we really like, Jalen Wright, obviously. But I think further down, there's, you know, I think Peter's, you know, sort of highlighted Isaiah Davis from South Dakota State. I think he's one to look out for. And also the one I really like, which is Isaac Garendo from Louisville. So I think we obviously talked about them in the offensive pod, but certainly three names to keep an eye on. From the running back stable. I think I certainly referenced cornerbacks that I like, the Jones brothers, Elijah and Jarian from Florida State and Boston College, respectively. I think Kyrie Jackson's also worth a mention just based on his athletic ability as well from Oregon. So again, probably three corners that aren't in the upper echelon of draft mocks and all that kind of stuff, but certainly three guys I really like in terms of size, speed, combinations.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, let's go one more position group. Wide receiver. Dare I say wide receiver, it's Andy Davies? Or is this the longest segment on the whole bloody pod?
Well, could I chip in on the wide receiver group?
Oh, go on.
see, I've got a view on this that may not agree with many people's view, right? But I think the Packers are really deep at wide receiver right now, right? So they've got, you know, don't need to go through all the names, but when you look beyond the, you know, you've still got Malik Heath and you've got Bo Melton beyond the first four, you know, and Samari Torre's still there. So you've got at least seven
Samari Torre's still there for some reason.
The practice squad as well. Dubose, so I think is probably
Grant Dubose. So,
I think he'll be a name this year to watch out for. I think I really hired him last year, and I think he'll be, he'll get a shot.
Absolutely. The reason I said that Samari Torre is still there is because people forget that he's there.
Yeah.
Right. So because we had the top four, and then we had Malik Heath came through, and Bo Melton came through, people forgot that, you know, the draft pick from 2 years ago, Samari Torre is still there on the roster. That's seven plus, as Andy quite rightly mentioned, Grant Dubose, and that's why. My unpopular take is that the Packers should not take a wide receiver late in this draft, right? Because I don't understand the point. Because unless he comes through to be really, really good, and, you know, that obviously can happen, is where does he fit on that depth chart?
Yeah.
You know, I 100% agree, Peter, but I like nice things.
You're trying to take nice things away from Andy P.
500 handbags. You don't need another one, but she'll go and buy one anyway. That's the point, isn't it? Yeah. You get it because you want it. It's not because you need it. It's because you want it.
I don't think they have practice squad rules, though, for handbags, Andy. I think there's a space issue. You know, there's a space in the closet issue. But, Andy...
It's the same principle, though, Steve. It's the same principle. Lack of space. We don't need one.
This is where Andy lists off 10 that he thinks the Packers should draft. trying to justify his opinion.
Absolutely. And there will be some really good guys down there. And you never know with injuries, and I understand all of that stuff. But that's kind of where I was going when we talked on the offensive pod. It wouldn't surprise me. It would slightly surprise me, but wouldn't shock me if they took one reasonably early.
Hmm.
I would be more surprised if they took one later. The only reason for taking one later is you've got 11 picks.
Yeah.
And you might just throw a dart, but I just don't see how they're going to break into that depth chart.
Right. So look, we're putting logic aside here, Peter. I don't know why you're being logical here, because we're going to get Andy to talk about his shiny things now, please.
you watch him go and take three wide receivers on day three.
Yeah, and a quarterback. But anyway, let's set about that.
The argument is the point you raised, Peter, is that the contracts are all going to roll together, aren't they? So I think that. Yeah. And he'll talk about it every press conference. Competition in the room is massive, isn't it? Competition in the room for every position group is crucial to development and improvement. So I think that I think you're probably right. Unfortunately, that the competition will come from within, and I do think Dubose will provide that competition. However, if I was going to take a punt at it, I wouldn't go particularly high and I wouldn't go particularly low. You're absolutely right. But I think in that sweet spot between rounds three and four is where our pick of the crop. And if they're on our board at a slightly higher position, then he'll take them, won't he? He'll take it regardless. So the guys that we talked about in terms of Javon Baker and all them kind of Jermaine Burton for me, I really like. I think there's a real possibility that they'll take a dip. I think in terms of names further down, the two guys from North and South Carolina, respectively, so Xavier Leggett and... Who's the other one? Devontae Walker from North Carolina. I think he's just a straight line speed guy, isn't he? I don't think he has much in terms of nuances in his route running. But I kind of look at him and thought, if Christian Watson's not at 100%, and we still haven't seen that yet, have we? Who else have we got to really sort of burn and stretch the field? So that was the only angle, looking at him sort of further down. And I think that Leggett's the kind of receiver that Packers like, isn't he? Big-bodied. Good athletic skills, good blocker, big receiver. So two names that we didn't talk about in the offensive pod, but just maybe it's in that sweet spot between sort of rounds two and four that would maybe entice the Packers into taking another wide receiver.
Peter, look, we know you're not high in the wide receivers, but running backs and cornerbacks, have you got any names like Andy did to sort of throw out there for us to take a look at?
Actually, Andy's mentioned pretty much all of the names. I mean, you know, he picked out some of the guys later on, the Isaiah Davises and the Isaac Garendos that he talked about on the previous pod. So those are kind of all of the names for me.
Well, we better keep you on the bloody mic here then before Andy gets at it. So is there any other positions, Pete, that Andy hasn't done that you want to throw out?
Well, I guess we've covered most of the positions. We covered quarterback last time round. I guess tight end. I don't look. There's a possibility they could go for one of the H backs that we talked about last time. That's the only other name I'll probably throw out there. I don't think we mentioned him first time around. Would be AJ Barner out of Michigan. Really good blocking tight end, was kind of the number two tight end at Michigan. He's a sixth or seventh round guy. I'm not sure whether the Packers would feel that they need another tight end type, but if they wanted one who was a really good blocker, you know, the head Mercedes Lewis, who was obviously a really fine blocker, they don't have anybody at that level. AJ Barner is a really good blocker, so a possibility, you know, late in day three.
What about linebackers?
I think we pretty much mentioned all of the names, certainly all of the names that I had on my watch list and stuff the other day. I just once I get beyond that initial group of four or five, you know, Andy mentioned some of the later round guys the other day. For me, there aren't the guys there that would really tempt me later on.
It's just nothing, Steve. That's really odd, isn't it? It's a really odd year for the linebacker. Like Peter alluded to, there's no real star guy at the top of the draft. Is there the one that you know would make you go off and spend a first round pick on it? And at the bottom of the board, I'm sure that some good players will come from it because the law of averages tells you the world. But it's like, I don't know, it's like opening the box of Quality Street and just seeing all those gold toffee ones left. Yeah, the empty wrappers even, yeah. Or even the wrappers where somebody's wrapped the wrappers up and made it look like a sweet. There's not a lot of interest or variety there. It's not for me. It's unfortunate. I think that's why I'm so keen for this to load up on the offensive line and maybe the D-line later on, because that's where the depth of talent is for me.
So have we sucked the whale dry, lads? Is there any other names that is out there that you want to float out before we close the book on the pre-draft stuff?
I just hope we get some of the guys that we're really high on, the likes of Jalen Wright and Cole Bishop and some of the guys Peter's talked about earlier on. I think they fit so well. They're just a really good fit. We just got to keep fingers and toes crossed that the board falls that way.
Yeah, and I think what that says is the more you think about this draft, the more and more you think about it, day two is going to be the crucial day, isn't it, for the Packers? Because that's where, you know, the guys that they really need to start, you know, strengthening the roster, lifting up certain positions, that's where all those guys are. You know, whether that's a running back like Jalen Wright to be the, you know, to start off as the number three running back, but a guy for development, whether that's the linebacker, whether it's corners, whether it's potentially Cole Bishop at the safety position, whether it's offensive lineman, whether it, you know, Kingsley Sumatera or some of those other guys, that day two looks really, really crucial for the Packers, as you know, to kind of determine whether this draft's a success. And fortunately, the Packers have got, you know, four picks on day two, so that really helps.
Our roster's really healthy now, isn't it? But if you throw in them three or four names added to that, we all of a sudden look really, you know, really healthy, don't we? We look really strong.
It really is, and it's that thing that you go right back to where we started, is where the Packers have, you know, have needs at linebacker and safety, other than Cooper DeJean, that strength is in day two. So the Packers' first round pick, to a degree, other than DeJean, is a little bit of a luxury as to what they do with it.
It's a
great position to be in.
Yeah. Yeah, because we always sort of bemoan, didn't we, that, and don't we, you know, the Packers are always picking later in the first round. Not always, you know, the last couple of years have been rough. But, you know, it's that kind of thing of like, all right, you know, as you said, the bread and butter stuff is day two and day three. So the last question, and we close out the podcast, would be, is that Andy, Pete, what are you doing on draft night? Are you staying up to watch it? Are you recording it and going to bed with a Werther's Original and some Ovaltine? I mean, what's the plan?
My plans won't involve Ovaltine, that's for sure. Vile stuff. Yeah. There's also good malty drinks out there, by the way.
Other malty drinks are available. So you're staying up for it, Andy? There's no way you'd miss it, yeah? I mean, after putting in all this work beforehand.
Yeah, I'll stay up as far as sort of 16, and then if it goes all pear-shaped after that, and I'll probably just nod off and turn off my phone. Yeah, we'll see where we get to. It just depends on the eyes, doesn't it? I think the body wants to do it, but it often ends up waking up at 6 o'clock and going, "Oh, what happened?
Yeah,
did I miss it? Yeah. Who do we get?"
And Peter, I mean, after 18 months of the draft guide, do you just nearly have to try to keep your body functioning before you go into some sort of pseudo hibernation? I mean, what's Peter Jones' war zone like?
Something like that. I'll definitely be up. I'll be watching it and recording it in case I nod off for a moment.
Yeah. So let's give the people what they yearn for. So this is the last of the three pre's, four really, because we get into your insane work ethic piece on the other one, so that's three, and then we're going to let the draft play out. Obviously we're going to try not get involved in that, and follow at Pooley Shrew, follow at the IT Hedgehog for Pete, because I'm sure, lads, you're going to be releasing your sort of, you know, very quick hot takes. We'll be quick to retweet them from the group accounts and all that kind of jazz as well. And then Sunday we're going to break it all down for people, and we're going to talk about earnestly who wins the draft. I mean, you know, is it an A, is it a B, can we project into the future? And I know we've different opinions probably on the podcast on that, don't we, lads, where yes, you can look at it and say, you know, from the information that we know, great draft. So we'll be doing that. But anyway, Final words. Anybody have anything else to say, or forever hold your 2024 peace?
No, looking forward to it. I think it's good. Sort of joking apart, I'll be up for the draft all 3 days, and I look forward to watching the board fall, seeing, you know, what options are available leading up to the pick, and then it's a lot easier to select and sort of narrow that shortlist down, isn't it? Sort of 5 minutes before we pick, so that's the best time for me, the most enjoyable bit, and that's the bit where the emotion kicks in when they pick somebody who's completely oblivious to your list. But on the flip side, it's great when you've narrowed it down and you get somewhere close. That's that makes it all worthwhile, I think, for Peter and myself, I guess.
Yep, absolutely. The other thing for me, I think, you know, just watching the draft, the early picks in the draft, just to see, you know, who goes that you don't expect them to go where they go.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, is there a guy that, you know, gets picked at pick 11 who's 30th on your board, or is there just one or two that complete surprises? And they usually are. Mm. So it would just be interesting to see how that pans out, and you know, what trades there are up near the top of the draft. You know, does Minnesota trade up and try and get their quarterback of the future? Can they get?
Oh, they'll try, won't they? They'll try, yeah, won't they? They're going to have to give up a lot to get there, aren't they? But they're going to get to what, three? Maybe.
Can they get to three? Will, you know, Elliot Wolf, who's now running the Patriots draft, will he be wanting to trade down from three? And what can he get for that pick? And all of that stuff. So that's what makes those, you know, early picks interesting. And as we get closer and closer to the Packers pick, assuming they've stayed at 25, we'll be able to get a better idea of who's going to be there.
Yeah, I can understand the entertainment value in it for sure, as you said. And then also when you see the draft picks fall the way they do, just the buzz and excitement that you see on social media because the potential to get your star dream player shows up, and then they inevitably don't. But, you know, the excitement's there momentarily. But look, great draft coverage. And again, the draft guide is free. It's on the website, ukpackers.co.uk. Peter Jones, 18 months of, probably more, Pete, if you're being honest, of toil and a labour of love is there. And, you know, 2025 is already in the works. So again, I have to thank you for all the work that you do. And it's great, the coverage that you get at this time as well. And of course, our draft guru. I think I put your face on some sort of Buddhist monk on a mountain before, Andy. Yeah. And we put you out there as the draft guru. Again, you know, making you look younger than we all are. So to our draft guru at Pooley Shrew, again, just an encyclopedic knowledge of all things, and just a sort of savant sixth sense type of pulling names out of hats. I don't know how you lads do it, but certainly, as I said before, we're indebted to you guys, and we're very lucky to have you. So look, enjoy the draft, everybody. Stay tuned to at the IT Hedgehog on Twitter, which is Pete, and Pooley Shrew, which is ex-professional footballer Andy Davies, and me at Steady the NFL, and the group, of course, at UK Packers. And we'll be back Sunday to break down everything that happened in the draft. Go Pack, go.
Go Pack, go.